Hello, listeners. You are listening to Indiewood on KPCRadio.com. I'm your host, Steve Lopez, and as usual, we're going to shed a light on local talent and show all you guys why we love filmmaking, so all of you out there know, hey, we're not that pretentious. And today, we're going to get into the wonderful world of filming on the web. My guest is a writer and producer from Columbia College Hollywood, who is currently working on 3 web series. He's knowledgeable of both the artistic and business aspects of film. Like many new age filmmakers, the internet serves as his portfolio and haven for creativity. David Legal, everyone.
Hey, how's it going?
How are you feeling, David?
I'm feeling good. How are you doing?
Oh, doing pretty great, honestly. So, just to introduce yourself, how do you see yourself as a filmmaker?
I got into film kind of like as an outlet, you know? So it started off as an art, but like any hobby or art, if you want to make it a career, I had to start thinking, like, how am I going to actually make money and do this as a living? So I would say it's I don't even know how to define myself. It's a battle between the artistic and the business side constantly. That's how I look at it.
Now, starting with the like creative side, mm-hmm. What were like some of like your early things to do in terms of film, like early works or like little projects you did before?
Well, my first two legitimate, or I'll skip to, there was one I did that was like an experimental, you know, I didn't even know how to use a camera kind of thing. But then my two legitimate first films were in high school. One was called Tacit Off. I actually won 2 Vic Awards, which is like a kids award thing. I don't remember. I don't like the film, so I bury it. But it was like about a Middle Eastern kid befriending an American who travels to Iran or something. Like I don't remember. It's been a while. Try to make it about friendship. And then the second one was a psychological thriller about someone who is experiencing a seizure, right? They're having a seizure and their brain is trying to tell them what's happening around, because during a seizure you can't really. So I don't know. It was avant-garde, but most of the stuff I direct tends to be avant-garde.
Now, in your own words, because mm-hmm. avant-garde is like a, it has a definition, but I would like to hear, what's your definition of avant-garde?
Something in which isn't surface level, which isn't digestible as a mainstream product, right? Something in which you have to explore post-viewing. Books can be avant-garde as well, art of any kind. It's when you stare at something and you look at it and you don't know what it is right away. You kind of have to think about it to really get its full effect. There's nothing wrong with something not being avant-garde. You know, there's value to looking at a piece of artwork of a woman and going, oh, it's a beautiful picture of a woman. But then you see Picasso paint something, and you're like, oh, well, you got to take a second to figure out what's happening here. That's my definition of avant-garde.
And proceeding from that, since you grew really into the avant-garde and that kind of stuff in high school, well, do you think about, like, what inspired this interest in, like, this very, like, surrealistic art, this very... Well, avant-garde, of course.
I had a little bit of a tough upbringing. I was homeless at one point in my life. I won't go into too much, but I had problems with parental stuff throughout, and those challenges, I think, affected my ability to become mature, right? Grow as an adult. So I think I had to grow up a lot faster and a lot quicker than some people, because I had missed a large portion of my life where most people are developed. They have an identity. They know who they are. They have certain opinions about things. I was kind of robbed of that. And I think my way to quickly assess the world was to view it through a distorted lens. You know, so avant-garde, it took me a while to see things clearly. And that subjective viewing kind of led me to express my confusion through art. And that's why I appreciate it so much.
To this day, are you still like being influenced by your past and having like this avant-garde basically image?
I'm sure I am. I think maybe it's not apparent to me. Maybe if I sat down and looked at it, there were definitely pieces of my internal battles about what is clear, what is not clear. I love the psychological thriller, because it's all about trying to decipher what is true and what is not. And growing up's all about, I have all these ideas in my head. How do we apply them to the real world, right? You may want to believe in Santa Claus, but when you find out he's not real, it changes your world. So I like the idea that we're so subjective, and yet there's so many objective things around us. how do those two have a relationship in our lives? You know, how much do we value what we think and what we imagine compared to what we know to be true or what we can see for proof?
Do you, when you actually like put those ideas into your film, is there like a specific message or mission of those films?
Yeah, I think the message is always nothing is ever clear, right? We always have to search for meaning, and meaning is not always apparent. And that doesn't mean meaning's not valuable. I think it just means meaning has to be begged for. It has to be, you have to have passion to find meaning in things. So although we live in a cold, large world, you know, you go to the redwoods, which I plan to film soon, and you got these tall trees that are much older and more ancient. They make you feel so small. But I love that feeling, and I think that's where that avant-garde art comes from, is that insignificance, but we make things significant. And that's kind of my message, is no matter how insignificant sometimes it seems, there's still significance we can create in our lives to be happy or explore new ideas and learn.
And with these experiences of like learning and your past influencing you, do you think in a way they make your films better for it? Like this, your life is reflecting your art in a positive manner?
I hope so. I also think maybe that's the duality of the art itself, is that it may be sometimes too avant-garde. Maybe sometimes I'll watch a film and I go, yeah, I was trying to say something, but I hadn't quite figured it out yet. So through the film, through the art, I was still begging the question. And I think with age and the more I've tested those films, I have kind of figured out how to drive that narrative. But I still think there's always learning to do within art. I think no matter how great a film is, no matter how great a director is, every work he does, he learns something new from it.
And have you definitely like cited certain like moments with films you had that you could tell us that, yeah, you learned from it?
There are two directors specifically that inspire me insanely amount. Like to degrees I'm not even sure if I could always pinpoint how so. There is Stanley Kubrick, which everyone always, it's always something. I love 2001 Space Odyssey. I love all his films. Actually, for me, the one that I can never wrap my head around in a good way, that constantly makes me come back and explore it, is The Shining. I love The Shining. I know people's complaints about it. The other one is Paul Thomas Anderson, who is a direct follow-up to Kubrick, actually, in the way he directs things. And my favorite piece of his, and to this day, arguably one of my favorite movies, is There Will Be Blood. The exploration of someone you could say is a sociopath on the rise to power. Because, again, going back to like my obsession with applying meaning, you know, he's a character whose meaning comes from power. And I love that. I love that exploration of that character. We learn so much about ourselves through that idea, because all of our lives is, you know, we're struggling about money and power and control. And we see a character like that and we go, oh, sometimes I think like that.
And with that, could you say, like, could you give us, like, an example with maybe one of your current three projects where you could tell us, like, yeah, definitely Kubrick or Anderson, this character is influenced by them, or this scene was influenced by them?
I would say maybe more so a fourth project that I'm working on. It's not a web series. It's a short film that I'm directing. It's about a young woman in her early 30s who has to who's running away from a very traumatic experience she had in the past, where she assisted her best friend in suicide because he had cancer and they were really close, and he didn't want to go out slowly, and she was convinced to help him. I think that one most definitely goes back to Stanley Kubrick, goes back to Paul Thomas Anderson and many other films from those two directors, because it explores the psyche of a character, and that psyche exploration is Kubrick's textbook. Everything in his films seems so alienating, but that's part of trying to find meaning with it. Is The Shining is such a cold film. It's so dark and cold, but there's humanity in it, and that's what makes it so daunting.
When you actually, like, now you talking to you as a film watcher, mm-hmm. a cinema viewer, do you like when there's a film that just, like, instead of just telling you a story, it's a gnawing at you. It's just, like, digging into your head and always bothering you, and you want that answer, you want that like truth, and you're always looking for it.
A lot of films definitely do that. Those are my favorites. But I don't know what, this is a little diatribe, but there's a short film, I believe it's Between the Devil and Me. It's on Vimeo. People should check it out. By far, it's a short film by some guy who's around my age in Chicago, I believe. I don't remember his name. One of the most talented people I've ever seen. I would say his film may be my favorite film. And I watched it again just the other day, trying to come up with the style, going back to this short film. Where did I get inspiration from? I was watching his short film going, I want to figure out how this guy did this. Because it speaks so many degrees. It basically follows a serial killer who... I think he's a musician. I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out, decipher the film, but he's like a musician and he makes a deal with the devil, or a metaphor of the devil, to get everything he wants. But by doing that, he loses like a love interest and whatever, because he sacrifices his greed for something else.
Personally, when you were just saying it, did you just like enjoy the fact that you were struggling with trying to explain the film? Did you just enjoy the fact that, wow, this is complex, trying to like tell all of our listeners what this film is?
I enjoyed it because it was captivating, because it was so daunting, but it also makes you uncomfortable when you don't understand something. You know, a lot of our fears come from not understanding, and that's kind of the root of that.
And what was this called again? The Devil and Me?
Between the Devil and Me, I think it's on Vimeo.
Yeah, just shameless advertising. Everyone go watch that.
Oh, yeah. It's excellent. Absolutely.
And hopefully with you, we'll be seeing some work like that as well.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. All my projects are kind of in pre-production hell, but they should come out soon. If you look me up, David Legal, without A-L, it's E-L, you should just find my IMDb, you know?
And now we're going to be, you just said pre-production, and now that's like, pre-production, of course, is just defined as, well, the film's not being made yet. It's more like in the setting stages. We're starting to delve into more like the technical and business room. Mm-hmm. So why don't you just talk about that? You told me about how you're like really into the business side of film as well.
Right. So despite all this avant-garde love, right, there's this other side where it's like, okay, I want to make this a career. So I went into producing, and now I'm a producer. I'm stuck in it. I have a love-hate relationship with it, because it's a battle between an artist and you know, a logical, how do I work in a capitalistic society guy. The best advice I give to people who kind of are trying to explore how to make their films profitable is to understand that we live in a majority, right? So to make your art successful, you can find a niche, but finding a niche costs money. So what's easier to find is a broad audience. So if you could take your very avant-garde niche idea and you can find a way to broaden it, and you can find a way to have a consumer level, it hurts. You every bone in your body is like, oh, I'm selling out. But then, guess what? Once you feed to that audience, you begin to identify that niche that you would have had to pay for to find before. And they know who you are, they like your stuff, and you can get more avant-garde the more audience gets to see you. Like Christopher Nolan is a great example. I mean, he started with Batman, and he was given the free reins to do Inception and everything. So he's the perfect example of someone who's so consumer-based and yet so avant-garde at the same time. And very few people can accomplish that. That's why so many people respect him.
And do you yourself, how did you like learn about this business side of filming? Was it from your school or your own research?
I learned a lot of information from my school. I don't want to say I don't, but it's very self-taught. It was very experimental. You know, I put something out there, see how people react to it, or really it's dissecting what other people are successful with and going, okay, how can I apply this to myself? I mean, if you can see what people are doing with podcasts these days, where they have a narrative each episode, it's not even a podcast, it's just a story like the old radio days, that's insane. So if you can take an idea like that and fit it into your world, you just made a business idea. It's not even an art idea. You thought of a business idea. Oh, we can make this into a radio show.
And you just said, like, with this whole business side, and you being a producer, mm-hmm. like you have like a love-hate relationship. What drives that, like, love-hate? Like, what do you love so much about it, and then what just, like, just gets at you?
I love the collaboration. Like, getting to work with other people, all the amazing people I get to meet, and these connections I build, and somewhat control, right? You know, I don't like being the boss, but there's somewhat liberating where we pick a project, like, we're going to do this. No, I'm not waiting for anyone to pick my project as a director or writer, which is why I go to this love-hate relationship as a director and writer. I don't want to always produce my own stuff. But that means I have to wait around for some producer or somebody else to take that role, and it's really hard. It's really hard. So that's the love-hate relationship, is I don't want to be the boss all the time. I don't like the logistics of it. I don't like the politics, but I like being able to get a group of people together that I enjoy working with, and everybody put the same amount of effort into a project that we all believe in. And me kind of, I'm very good at like kind of keeping the morale on a set or a morale on the project and helping the writers and helping the director. Everybody feel like this is our goal. We need to get to this. And no matter how slow or fast, that's what I love about producing. Now, the side is the political end, the arguments, the permits, the legal areas, all that. I hate it. I absolutely can't stand it. And on the same side, the director and the writer, you know, I want to make art, and people, I got to wait for other people to make art. So that's the love-hate relationship.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting that you like brought up that you love the collaboration so much, because as you said before, you are currently working on 3 web series. Mm-hmm. Could you talk about that a little bit?
So yeah, one is like a news comedy about a group of news anchors, kind of in the style of The Office. It's mockumentary that are all incompetent, because that's what made The Office so great, or Parks and Rec or something like that. And it's commentary on the modern day news. It's humorous, but I wanted to make something where we get to make fun of the news and we get to have fun with it, so we're not too political. Then there is a dating web series about a young man who suffers from hallucinations, and he's out there looking for the perfect, you know, partner. He's bisexual, so, you know, he kind of flexes on both sides of the spectrum, but he has the expectation to find someone perfect, and that leaves him at risk for falling in love with his imagination. So that's about overcoming your own insecurities, because often people who have those standards are insecure about themselves. And the third one is a sci-fi series I'm working with a YouTuber named Bryce Makes Films on, about a young woman who has like a chip in her head that begins to glitch out and show her memories she doesn't recognize. And so it sends her on this journey to kind of uncover the truth about herself. So that, again, that kind of goes back. I didn't write that one, but it goes back to like my core of being interested in these stories about learning about yourself through the exploration of the unknown. So it's weird. I didn't write that. I just came across it, and I love this guy. He's a good friend of mine, and I just like, I gotta produce this. So I am.
And for the other two, are you just producing them, or are you also helping writing with the other two?
I help write with the news one. I'm a co-creator, so there's 4 of us: Jonathan Rush, Jack Uran, and Tony Hall, and myself. We created that show. I would say the name, but we're still getting the copyright licensing under role. But and the other one I created, and now I'm co-writing with my friend Andy Aguila on the dating one. But that last one, the sci-fi one's all Bryce. It's his idea, but I love it.
Speaking of that, how does it feel like working on a project where it's like, of course you're producing, so you have a big stake in it, but like more so the creative end was mostly someone else?
Can you repeat that?
Apologies. How does it feel like working on a project where, yes, you're producing, but like the more creative end of it was done by somebody else?
Liberating. Feels liberating. Right. When it works. You know, I will step in, because producers also job is to quality control, right? We got to make sure, oh, I want this to be successful. So if I see an opportunity to be like, oh, you're missing this, right? You're missing this. But if I'm working with someone I really trust, like Bryce, it rarely ever happens. I mean, he's really talented. He's growing. We have a premiere of his latest web series. I can't say the name of that one. Blue Horizon, May 18th. So we're going to be screening that. That's really fun. I can't invite anyone to it. It's a private screening. But hopefully he posts that on YouTube soon. I don't know. It's liberating, because that's that love-hate relationship again, right? I don't have to worry about the creative process. I can focus on one aspect, but I don't love everything about that aspect. So it's weird. It's weird being both a producer and a creative person. It's weird.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of, like, again, your love-hate relationship, is there any, like, moments where you just, like, you're working on a project and it was like a real big struggle, or like it got to the point where you're just like, I can't do this?
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. I've worked with people who I don't have the same ethical and moral outlook on producing as me. I was in a producing team. I don't like how they operated. I would say, you know, there's an argument to say that they're better producers than me, because they're very good at manipulating people around them and lying and being dishonest. But when I was in that, I don't care if I got the end result. You know, these people don't want to work with you again, and they're constantly working with new people because the last group figures out that they don't like them. I think that, and this is advice for anyone that wants to go into film, if you can be somewhat good at your job, but be a great person and be great to be around and help the morale of everybody on that project, you're always going to get chosen over the person who's 10 times more talented than you but is a jerk, right? So it's all about having that good attitude, because a collaborative work means you may not be the best, but when you're working with other people and you can effectively bring their morale up, you see some crazy stuff happen on set that you wouldn't expect from people with that experience level. So morale is a big part of it.
Do you personally like seek that when you like look for projects? Like, you always look for like either a friend who's already involved or like just good people, like a good vibe?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've had enough experience with people with bad vibes that I no longer do it. Sure, they may be super successful soon, and I may have missed out on that opportunity, but then it's not art if you're miserable. You're just gonna have a really unmotivated, unpassionate project. And yeah, sure, it's part of this is a business. You're gonna make a product. But I still want to kind of love that project. I may not, you know, it may not be the greatest thing in the world, but I want to have some excitement towards it.
And now you actually brought up like your friend posting stuff on YouTube and you posting stuff on YouTube. How does it feel like doing filmmaking, making web series on like, you know, away from the silver screen, being on the internet for filmmaking?
You know, it's kind of scary, because the silver screen is the dream. There's something about that room when you sit in a big screen and that sound, that it's an experience. YouTube and content on the internet is a different, I wouldn't even call it an experience, it's entertainment, right? It could be artistic, but you're not gonna have the same experience with that art. There's nothing wrong with it. And a lot of what I'm working on is catered towards internet world. We're gonna be pitching it to studios. It doesn't have to exist on TV or in the movie theater. It can survive on the internet. And that, I think that's, on that note, everybody should do that. Find two routes for your project. Can it live on the internet if someone else can't pick you up? Because there's so many new opportunities on the internet. That may not be where you want to land. I get that, because I don't want to land on the internet forever. But there's nothing wrong with it, because it will lead to something in the future. You may not get on the silver screen now. You may not get on television now. You may not get on Hulu, Netflix, Prime now. But trust me, if you have something out there and it is on the internet, it's better than someone having nothing out there. So, yeah, make a plan for that. The internet is fun. You get to interact. That's the best thing about it, is you get to interact with the people. There is no barrier between you and the audience, which is both great and bad, because some people can be very rude, as we know. But that interaction with the audience is valuable, because they see you as an artist, instead of like a shady business guy behind a wall that you'll never see. I mean, you know, there is a wall between us and the people who make shows on Hulu. I mean, they may go on social media, but the truth is they're not on a platform where there's a comment section. There's no comment section on Netflix. There's no follow link. It's a different world, you know? So I think the internet's valuable, but it should work in cooperation with these other mediums instead of verses, because that's never going to work.
Now, since you said it's just like, you told people like, go out there and do it, do you think that's like a good thing for our time, to like this internet age? It's like filmmaking is more accessible to people. It's like an age where, yeah, you can be someone big. Yeah, you can go out there and do it.
Yeah, I think it's hard, because the industry expects a stepping stone. So if you take your not so great camera and you go film something, yeah, go do it. But after three or four short films, you're going to want to start making it look nicer and having things look better and more cinematic and be more professional looking. And the people in the industry are looking for that too. So they may like that you're doing stuff, but they want to see progress. And I think that's the biggest barrier, is that everyone always like, go on film. Absolutely. Go ahead, do that. But plan out a progress. Plan out a way to get resources or connections or funding or donations or fundraisers. Plan out a way that you can take your not so great 480p camera that for some reason you're still using and making films with, and get like a real nice cinema camera. Or, you know, there's cameras out there that are like cinema-like and sound people. I just think, don't let people say, oh, you could just go out and do it, because that's not true. It's not true. It takes hard work to go out and do it. So don't let that excitement of like, oh yeah, I can make a film today. Everybody making films. Yeah, but how many people stick with it? Well, it's the people that put that much effort and work into it, and you see that progress. You see their first film, and then you see their fourth, and you see, oh wow, they've really learned a lot. But if you're still using that 480p camera and you got no boom and you got no sound and you got no locations, you're still using your room, no one's going to feel like you've learned anything. And, you know, it's not perfect. It sucks because most of us don't have these resources, but go out and find it. It's going to be hard, but don't give up.
Well, actually, that was actually a really, really amazing closing statement. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Right on.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me. On here.
That was David Ligo, everybody. And once again, I'm Steve Lopez, host of IndieWood on KPC Radio. And next week, we're actually going to delve into the more melodic and musical side of filming. Until then, I bid you all adieu.